Part two on Under the Helmet with Paul Perticchese of SaturdayToSundayFootball.com, the Saturday to Sunday football podcast there you can find on your podcasting platforms. We're going to talk in this episode about wide receivers, tight ends, as well as the 2025 NFL draft class. Never too early to get a head start. And he mentions a super sleeper at the quarterback position. We get one every year, seemingly, that rises up like a phoenix from someone not hardly talked about to someone that ends up having round one buzz or even going in the top five. So you want to stay tuned towards the end of the show for Paul to share his knowledge and also sharing his time and talents on this series of episodes here on Under the Helmet. At the wide receiver position, you talked about pedigree being paramount. So let's talk about the cluster, you know, the late first, early second there. It's a critical zone. You got Keon Coleman, for example, over Xavier Leggett. Can you talk about that a little bit? You got Ladd McConkey over both of them. So those landing spots in the early second round versus that round one pedigree of guys like Leggett and Pearsall that we did not expect. That's a very interesting ranking range for everybody this season.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I do incorporate draft capital a lot, but these guys from almost, I'll even throw in Brian Thomas there, who went 23rd, from like Brian Thomas at 23 to those first couple picks in round two, we're talking about 10 picks. And I think it was very much like flavor that the each team might have ranked these guys very differently. So like, I think it matters tiny bit, but usually like I would say, oh, round one draft capital over round two, but they're, that's usually if we're talking middle of round two or late round two. So I think because they're so close, draft capital didn't really incorporate it much at all in these rankings. So to me, then it became, you know, film eval, landing spot, quarterback, immediate opportunity. That's kind of how I went there. So for me, you talked about it before, Xavier Worthy, who I liked a lot on film to begin with, pairs up with, you know, Patrick Mahomes. You know, listen, Hollywood Brown's probably only there on a one-year deal. You know, they signed him to a one-year deal, so he's probably only there for 1 year. We'll see about Rashee Rice and if he misses some time this year with a suspension. But I like that pairing of Xavier Worthy. You know, for years, myself included at times, wanted to make Mecole Hardman something in that Kansas City offense, and it never materialized. But he was never nearly the refined player in terms of a route runner and a guy who produced in college like Xavier Worthy is. So to me, with that offense, with Mahomes, with Andy Reid is why I have him first. Ladd McConkey, I love Ladd McConkey. I think people maybe want to pigeonhole him too much as just like a slot guy. To me, he's got inside-outside versatility. He's real fluid and smooth, almost like in a Chris Olave way. So for me, the immediate opportunity and being attached to Justin Herbert got me excited about Ladd McConkey, but it's almost a coin flip between him and Brian Thomas Jr. You know, they obviously went out, they signed Gabriel Davis. I think Brian Thomas is a much better version or will be a much better version than Gabriel Davis. They still got Christian Kirk. They obviously fed Evan Ingram a lot of targets. But for me, I have more question marks about Trevor Lawrence than I do about Justin Herbert. I have some about Justin Herbert. I think he's gotten mostly a free pass sometimes, but Trevor Lawrence to me has really gotten a free pass. Like I know his first year, you know, with, you know, the disaster that was Urban Meyer, but he has not lived up to what the expectations were as the first pick overall at the time, supposed to be a generational quarterback. So right now I think Herbert can maybe elevate Ladd McConkey to a little bit higher of a level than Trevor Lawrence can elevate Brian Thomas. And I really am a big Christian Kirk fan. So I think immediate opportunity is a little bit higher for McConkey. And I think the ceiling is not all that different. I think Brian Thomas might have the slightly higher ceiling just because of the physical attributes that if he puts it all together, but I also think he's a more raw, a late year, you know, late college breakout. This was his, you know, one big year is why I have him there. And then you mentioned Keon Coleman and Xavier Leggett. For me, that really comes down to the quarterback and just my initial film evals. I really like Keon Coleman. I think he was getting slept on the whole pre-draft process because of the 4.6. I think his play speed is way better than that. I think people are very biased against guys that they kind of pigeonhole everybody to be Quentin Johnston, N'Keal Harry, and I think sometimes we got to try to decipher guys that are more like them and guys who are more like T. Higgins or Mike Williams. I look at Keon Coleman more like T. Higgins, Mike Williams, in terms of his ball skills, body control, and his play speed being good, than I do N'Keal Harry, who I never was in on, and Quentin Johnston, who I wasn't in on at all last year. And Xavier Leggett, I have some more questions, whether it's bully ball you know, approach will work. And I also have a lot of questions about that offense. They're throwing a lot of assets, which I think they is smart. But, you know, Adam Thielen's still there. They drafted John Domingo in the second round last year. Have they completely given up on him? It kind of feels that way. They traded for Deontay Johnson. Now, you know, they get Xavier Leggett there. So for me, give me Josh Allen. Give me the immediate opportunity, which is that Buffalo Bills pass offense, you know, in that depth chart at the wide receiver position, and just personally liking the player better is why I have Coleman ahead of Leggett.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Leggett because he wasn't one that I was tracking, you know, heavily through the collegiate ranks. And he was a basic non-factor for 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
Can you just give a couple bullet points? When you were doing last summer, was Xavier Leggett really even on your board? Was he someone that popped up only the last 6 to 9 months? Or was he someone that was still like, hey, a lot of tools. What if it comes together? Like, were you seeing that the train could be leaving the station and he could have a breakout year to some capacity in 2023. Like, was that on your radar at all? Like, is this a complete shock? Like, is he going from wide receiver 30 for you, you know, last summer to all of a sudden, whoa, he's a first round pick. He's kind of trending towards the top 50 through the draft process. Like, how much of a surprise was this?
Big surprise. And here's the best way I can kind of decipher that. I watch give or take between 20 and 25 wide receivers in the summer last year and do a full write-up on them for, you know, our scouting notebook. And I have another watch list of another 10 or 12 guys that just don't make the cut because I kind of wait to see how the season plays out. Xavier Leggett wasn't one of my 20 to 25 guys I watched. He wasn't even one of my 10 guys that were like on the immediate watch list. His teammate, Juice Wells, who now transferred to Ole Miss,
he was
the guy from that. Yeah, he was the guy from the South Carolina offense that I thought had a legitimate chance to be a round two guy. So he was the guy I scouted last year. He was the guy who I thought was going to be the number one option for South Carolina this year. Xavier Leggett was not on my radar, not until like maybe week 6 or week 7 of the college football season. And he was producing in week after week. I said, okay, he's now got to be on the radar. I've been talking about him, you know, about just weekly recap shows. I got to really sit down and watch some film on him. And I started to watch some film on him. I still thought he was going to be more of like a late second, early third. So even like before the draft, I still thought there was going to be a scenario where, you know, I guess the week before the draft, you really started hearing the buzz that he could be a late round one guy, early round two. So I at that point, I knew the late second or early third was out the window. Like the first day of the Senior Bowl, there was a lot of negative reports out about Xavier Leggett, and people were like, oh, he's more of a third rounder, mid third rounder. And I was like, well, that's silly just to base it off one day of the Senior Bowl, but that's not that far off where I thought he was talent wise. I thought he was, you know, a mid to late second at best, or even an early third, and then he kind of catapulted himself up. So for me, he wasn't on my radar. So he's really got to just kind of came out. And what we said before, there is no long-term track record. It's just this year. And would that opportunity have even been there to really seize it? And good for him for doing it. Would he even have done that if Juice Wells didn't suffer that injury and kind of take him away from being their lead guy, which what he was supposed to be at South Carolina?
Yeah, absolutely. One wide receiver that we talk about plummeting in the draft, someone that round one, you know, possibilities certainly seemed like a round two guy at worst. Troy Franklin falls to round four. Denver aggressively trades up. They basically trade two picks that were coming up in the next 30 to 35 picks, I believe, to go up and get Troy Franklin. So they go 2 for 1 there. And so he gets to connect with Bo Nix, his college quarterback there from Oregon. So there's some positive there. A lot of people want to say he's the best, you know, and again, in my model, he looks like the best guy in day three since Amon-Ra St. Brown. That doesn't mean he's like Amon-Ra St. Brown in any stylistic way. But again, a really good profile that ends up falling down the board. One thing, just observing your rankings, you didn't really take the bait because he's going in the top 20 or 25 religiously. You have him beyond that. So I'm imagining that the fall, maybe you were lower on him last summer. So the incoming grade, and then also going through this process and incorporating round four, you definitely have him to where, to me, it's more appropriate based on where he ended up going in the draft.
Yeah, for me, I did like Troy Franklin. I thought he had a legitimate chance to be a early to mid second round pick. So this ranking for me is more of, I don't, the draft capital. And listen, I was burned by, you brought him up, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I told a lot of people, like, you know, not to draft him on Ross St. Brown, or not to draft him, but not to draft him as high as he was in the immediate ADP, you know, rankings. But with Troy Franklin, I could be making that same mistake again, but I think more times than not, it's hard for that vapory draft capital to really become a major star. We've seen it with Amon-Ra St. Brown, so it's not impossible. But to me, it is one of those things where you're really trying to, it's an outlier. And we don't see those outliers a lot. Like, people wanted to take the bait on Hakeem Butler that year. You know, everyone had him high in their ranks. He went to the fourth round. People were taking him way too high in rookie rankings drafts. Like, people were taking him like early to mid second round, the fourth round pick. We did it with Equanimeous St. Brown, you know, and then when Amon-Ra was taken, I was like, I'm going to be a little bit hesitant. I'm going to take that draft capital into stock here. And that's kind of where I am with Troy Franklin. I kind of do like the player. And then when you talk about being paired with his former, you know, college quarterback, I think there is intrigue there. And I do think this is the scenario. I have him kind of grouped in there with like Malachi Corley, Roman Wilson. I kind of sneak in Ben Sinnott right there as well. And then Javon Baker right after Troy Franklin. You know, to me, that there's a little bit, there's fluidity there. I think some people are just kind of saying, okay, he's going to be that number one guy or number two. Well, we kind of all thought Marvin Mims was going to take that, you know, big opportunity.
Yeah, Marvin Mims
went
in the
year.
Second round and people are leaving him. Like, does he cost any more right now than Troy Franklin, that rookie pick? And Marvin Mims was a superior profile. And you got Courtland Sutton, who I don't think, why would they trade him? Like, it doesn't make any sense on the low number that he is he's owed this year. So it seems like Troy Franklin, the opportunity to be the true number one guy, it's you, maybe it's slightly better than your typical day three wide receiver, but not elevated to the point of assuming he went in the second or third round.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I am. And if somebody wants to take him over Malachi Corley, I think that's fine. But Malachi Corley, if he hits, he's going to be the number two wide receiver used, is that slot guy, that offensive weapon there for the Jets, because we know Garrett Wilson's going to be the guy. So if somebody wants to say, I want to gamble on Troy Franklin ahead of Malachi Corley, totally get it. Same thing.
The big problems I have are Jalen Polk, who went in the early second round, and you see it really wide open there for New England. Yes. Another one for me is Jalen Wright, where explosive player goes to explosive offense that takes an injury or two. We saw Devon Achane get hurt, and Raheem Mostert hasn't been the bill of health. That thing could break wide open, and all of a sudden you have a guy that's producing like a running back one in fantasy. And I think you got to be careful passing, especially on those two guys, if you're going to take Troy Franklin in that later second, let's say.
And then and that fourth round, it always comes back to this. Like, they're not going to make a decision next free agent cycle and next draft cycle based on right. a fourth round pick. They're just not, unless like he just explodes and has like this ridiculous rookie season. Sure, then they might. But like, I don't see the Denver Broncos having this explosive offense with a rookie quarterback, right. a lot of question marks. So to me, okay, even if this is Courtland Sutton's last year, well, then they go into next offseason with, you know, Marvin Mims entering his third year, Troy Franklin entering his second year, they're probably going to be looking to invest.
You hold your breath with a day three guy, whether it's a running back or wide receiver, every single offseason until, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown too, look at how well he produced. And then guess what? He comes in the next year, produces even more.
Exactly.
And now he gets a big, you know, a big contract that's one of the top ones in the NFL market at the position. I mean, that story is not super common. The Stephon Diggs story, the Tyreek Hill story is not super common there at wide receiver.
I think people expect those stories a lot more often than they happen. And more times than not, we get the Hakeem Butlers or the Equanimeous St. Browns and stuff like that. And so I think it's one of those delicate balances. Yeah, there are, of course, if you always are down on the Dupree guys, you're going to miss the occasional big hit, because sometimes it is going to happen. And I've talked about it a lot on my show about, you know, I looked at Amon-Ra St. Brown and I really liked him on film. He was a guy who I thought was a round two, round three pick. And then when he fell, I adjusted, you know, my dynasty rookie rankings accordingly. As like, he's a fourth round pick. Is there a lot of like, there's not a lot of stability there. So I didn't hold on to my film ranks there. And obviously that one is one that is on the loss in terms of where I had him ranked. But I think more times than not, like, I did move Hakeem Butler way down. I did move Equanimeous St. Brown way down. And those, you know, would be wins. And there's scenarios of that every single year. I'm always going to be very hesitant to really push into that top 20, right? You said Troy Franklin's in that like 20 to 20. Like, to me, there's a lot of offensive skill players in this draft, more than usual, right? With the quarterbacks, you know, and the wide receivers, so many wide receivers, I think 16 of them went on like, the, you know, top 100. for me to have him in like the 20 range seems a little rich considering he slipped to the early portion of round four. And like you said, what if the Broncos didn't take him there? Maybe they looked at it as that pairing with Bo Nix, but every other team passed on him for a while when some people thought he could have been a round two or a round three guy.
Yeah, absolutely. The two day three tight ends that are going to have opportunities. Opportunity is the operative word, not necessarily dominance or production. Coming out of day three, that a lot of people, the conversation we just had about Troy Franklin applies to Jatavion Sanders. A lot of people assumed he was going to be tight end two off the board. He wasn't. He was tight end four. He goes early day three. He didn't go round two like a lot of the expectation there. You have him relatively low, which means, hey, I'm adjusting to the draft position and the new reality here. And then close to your neck of the woods here, we got Theo Johnson, who could be a hedge on Darren Waller. I would actually love to hear your thoughts on Darren Waller. I think if you have one foot out, you're all the way out, and he's probably not going to play this year, and he's probably done. He's had a myriad of injuries and just hasn't come together there with that Giants time either. So Theo Johnson, potential starter, does that mean anything competing with Daniel Bellinger there? And then Jatavion Sanders, opportunity maybe to start in Carolina, but a lot of competition for targets in day three.
Yeah, I like both those players, but I think we sometimes get too excited about rookie tight ends and understand that, yes, Sam Laporta, extreme outlier last year. We at least have had guys produce early now. We had Evan Ingram, we had Kyle Pitts, we had Sam Laporta, but we also have tons and tons of evidence of guys not producing early in their career, sometimes not even in their rookie contract. When you look at these two players, Jatavion Sanders is a guy I still liked. He's a guy that I still thought warranted going in the third round. He went to like the first or second pick in round four. And what I've compared this whole process with for Jatavion Sanders is Isaiah Likely. I really liked Isaiah Likely on his college film. And then he went in the pre-draft process, just flat out bombed it. We all thought he was going to be like a 4.5 guy. I think he ran like a 4.68 or 4.7. And all of a sudden, like, he falls from like a guy that most people thought was going to go day two to, I believe it was round five. And then as soon as he stepped foot on the first preseason game or second preseason game he was in, all of a sudden he looked just like that guy that was lighting it up at Coastal Carolina. And when he's gotten opportunities and played some Mark Andrews, he's looked very good. I kind of think that's going to be the path for Jatavion Sanders, because all his film is a guy who attacks the seam, gets open, creates separation, was one of the focal points of that Texas offense, produced in college a lot. I just think he was maybe a bad tester. I think his play speed's better than that. So I am intrigued by him, but also understand he's a fourth round tight end that they're not going to be locked into any definitive opportunity if they don't look good. So I think sometimes we can't overreact to that. But I do think where I have him, I'm looking at my big board, I could see a scenario where I still, you know, I haven't personally had to do any of my rookie drafts just yet. Most of mine start in a couple weeks. I could see a scenario where I bump him up a little bit. I have him at 35. I could see a realistic scenario if I sit down and look at this again, that maybe I put him in that like 31, 32 range. I don't think I'd go higher than that. So I think he's kind of like in that like latter part, mid to late round three-ish range. For Theo Johnson, I do agree with you. I think Waller's out. I don't know if they had a little bit of like an understanding, like kind of wait and let the draft play itself out. But now it's been a week or so and we still haven't heard. I thought maybe I wasn't going to be too surprised if we heard something like a day or two after the draft. And they had like a little bit of a handshake agreement, like don't make it public. So, you know, it doesn't look like we're as in need of a tight end. But I do think he's probably out. Like, I unless he's going to like try to see, you know, if he could kind of miss a lot of the offseason and then show up at the last minute, which again, how committed is he going to be? I really like Theo Johnson's upside. I think his upside in this class is very intriguing. I think Penn State, the quarterback play, the tight end usage, the fact that there's another tight end on the roster who's probably going to be a top 50 or top 75 pick next year. To me, a lot of that made it so Theo Johnson wasn't going to ball out in college. But the athletic ability, I think he is one of the few people I feel really confident saying I think he's going to be a better NFL player, a better pro than college player. I'm not necessarily sure it translates to great fantasy production. I think Daniel Bellinger was pretty solid his rookie year. So I think even if Waller retires this year, I think Waller's probably going to play a higher percentage of snaps. I think Johnson will be utilized, obviously, in all two tight end sets. I think he'll be utilized a lot near the red zone because of his size and athletic ability. But I don't think it's a guarantee that he sent Daniel Bellinger to be the clear tight end two and he's the clear tight end one, because I do think they like Daniel Bellinger. And Daniel Bellinger was a surprise, really high-level athlete coming out too, that was known more for his like blocking capabilities at San Diego State. And the Giants, this same regime, drafted him in the early fourth round, right? So I do think there's a scenario where it's basically a split, and then if they're playing equal time, is that going to amount to fantasy viability for any of them? Very possibly, most likely not.
A couple quick questions, just to again get people's appetites wet for 2025 here. And so we get a quarterback every year that pops up. We saw Anthony Richardson really 12 months before not be on the radar. He ends up being a top five pick. This past year, you talked about how, you know, I mean, look at, you know, Drake May got the pedigree, but man, he was looking like a superstar after 2 years. And then there was a lot of questions and people want to pick him apart after year three. Michael Penix, you know, Bo Nix, certainly not on that trajectory. Jaden Daniels wouldn't have been a Heisman winner, all those things. So if you're looking out to 2025 of the eligibles and take out maybe Carson Beck, you know, viewed as maybe the safe choice to be a top five, top 10 pick, Shedeur Sanders. Is there someone that you can see coming from the, hey, they haven't played a lot and they haven't had the best opportunity yet, but they're going to have a huge season and propel them to get that momentum, that train headed towards a top five, top 10, or even just a round one selection that we're not really talking about them today?
Yeah, to me, it's Donovan Smith out of Houston. And I've been talking about him a little bit on Twitter. And he's the guy that he reminds me a lot of, like Ben Roethlisberger in college, Miami of Ohio, Ben Roethlisberger. He reminds me of Dante Culpepper. There's a lot to like about Donovan Smith's game out of Houston, the size, the frame, keeping plays alive because he's so big and massive to try to take him down in the pocket. He's got, you know, the capability to be a runner very much like young Ben or Dante Culpepper because he's just so big. To me, he's going to be a little bit of a red zone guy that gets you some sneaky fantasy points that way. He's got the arm, you know, the arm talent in terms of velocity and strength. For him, it's really putting it together in terms of more consistency. He's kind of off the radar a little bit. I did see he was on Jim Nagy's like list of quarterbacks, potential quarterbacks for the Senior Bowl. Like, he put out a little bit of a watch list. That was the first spot where I kind of saw like a national, like a major, you know, national person kind of put him out there a little bit. But he's the guy who I really think could have that mediocre rise because he's got the size, he's got the frame, he's got the arm talent, and he's got, you know, the athletic ability as well. It's just, can he put it all together in terms of the progression reading, the ball placement, stuff like that? Because if he shows that he's just even average in that stuff, I think he's going to get catapulted to the top of the board, similar to what we saw with Anthony Richardson, similar to what we've seen with other players. So he'd be my quarterback that I'd be circling. I'd be trying to get in any Devy league I can right now because he's not a highly regarded guy. He's not a guy that people are probably holding on to and saying, no way, I'm going to move Donovan Smith. He's probably even available in a lot of Devy leagues, depending on the size of the Devy league.
Yeah, I play in one that's 200 league-wide cap, which is pretty deep for Devy, and he went undrafted completely. Yeah. No one even a whisper of him. And he's got some good ancillary metrics. One thing I look at is pressure to sack. He's a very controllable 17%. So even if you say, hey, rough around the edges, he knows how to navigate a pocket, you know, and that's one of the bigger things that you might have questions about some of these other quarterbacks. Sam Howell was a big one. We'll see about Jaden Daniels. He's also high in that category. This is a good one. Again, you want to talk about deep, super deep there with Donovan Smith. Same kind of question, Xavier Leggett style, you know, of the wide receiver position. Is there someone that maybe they've had some opportunities, maybe they transferred, they portaled? Is there someone that they're going to have a breakout season or finish off their profile that we might be talking about in the first couple of rounds next year where, like you just said, not really a household name at present?
I think the wide receiver that might fit that mold is, I really like, and I even liked him for this year's draft class if he came out, is J. Michael Sturdivant out of UCLA. He's a guy who I think started to gain a little bit of notoriety this year. And he was a guy that I studied last summer. And I thought he had day two talent in terms of on film. And then I thought this year, as the year progressed, he was still showing those glimpses. He obviously chose to go back to school, which I think was probably the right decision, especially with how great this wide receiver class was. But I do think I could see him having a monster year this year and maybe catapulting himself into that top 50 mix. Similar, nobody was talking about A.D. Mitchell last year at this time. We knew about him in the past because he was a big time recruit. It was at Georgia and all that. But like he kind of used this year. And like you said, Xavier Leggett's even a more extreme because he wasn't even on people's radars. I do look at a guy like J. Michael Sturdivant out of UCLA as a guy who could kind of catapult himself to being in that top 50 mix. So he'd be a guy at the wide receiver position that I'd be kind of honing in on, trying to buy early before, you know, he becomes a little bit more of a well-known big name.
I love that. He was draft eligible this year and he kind of needed a big year and he really fell back. You kind of look at some of the drop rate stuff and just did not continue that momentum he had from a couple years ago. And that's really what it takes. He probably got an advisory grade of like, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh round. He's like, I'll go back, get a little bit of nil money, try to improve my profile and try to be a top 100 pick, which is smart stuff by some of these prospects. It was a loaded class, so he was going to have a tough time, you know, exactly. Even if he had a good year, you know, of being one of the top 10 to 15 off the board, probably highly competitive there.
Yeah.
Paul Perticchese, love it. Thank you so much for coming on, sharing your time and talents, Saturday to Sunday football.com. And again, someone that I use as a resource for Devi and college football talk, as we mentioned in the top of the show. That's something that for Dynasty, even if you don't play Devi, you got to be plugged into to see the story of these prospects. So Saturday to Sunday is the podcast that you can go out there and find on all of your devices as well. So thanks for coming on, Paul. And as always, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.